Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book Virtue, Politics, Soulcraft, and Statecraft in Renaissance Italy is a scholarly work of intellectual history by James Hankins that examines how Renaissance Italians connected ethics, education, and political life. Rather than treating the period mainly as the birthplace of modern power politics or constitutional theory, the book argues that many humanists saw the cultivation of virtue as the real basis of civic order. Hankins traces this concern from Petrarch through Machiavelli and beyond, showing how debates over leadership, citizenship, public service, and moral education shaped Renaissance political thought. The book is not a narrative history of events or a guide to modern policy. It is an interpretive study of ideas focused on how writers and statesmen understood the relationship between the inner formation of character and the external practice of government. Its purpose is to revise familiar assumptions about the Renaissance and to restore moral reform rather than institutional design alone, to the center of the period's political imagination. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Renaissance politics as moral reform rather than institutional design. One of the book's central claims is that Renaissance political thought cannot be reduced to debates about constitutions, offices, or legal mechanisms. Hankins shows that many humanists were less interested in redesigning political institutions than in reforming the moral habits of the people who lived under them. This shift in emphasis matters, because it changes the standard way the period is read. Instead of seeing the Renaissance primarily as a prelude to modern republicanism, or as a world moving towards secular power politics, the book presents it as a culture deeply concerned with virtue, character, and civic responsibility. Political stability, in this view, depended on the ethical quality of citizens and rulers. That makes the book a study of political philosophy as moral diagnosis. It asks why societies break down and why public life improves, and answers those questions in terms of virtue, discipline, and education. The result is a reinterpretation of Renaissance humanism as a program of ethical and civic renewal. Secondly, soulcraft as the foundation of effective statecraft. The phrase soulcraft and statecraft captures the book's most important conceptual link, the idea that good government depends on the formation of good persons. Hankins argues that Renaissance thinkers treated personal moral development as a precondition for public success. Leaders needed prudence, justice, courage, and restraint, while citizens needed the habits required for participation in civic life. This is not simply a claim that ethics are nice to have in politics. It is a stronger argument that political institutions cannot compensate for corrupted character. A state may possess laws, armies, and offices, but if those who govern and obey are driven by vanity, greed, faction, or fear, the polity will remain unstable. The book therefore treats education and self-cultivation as political necessities. In Renaissance terms, soulcraft was not private piety detached from public life. It was the process by which a society prepared people to govern well and to be governed well. That makes the book especially valuable for understanding how Renaissance moral philosophy translated into practical civic ideals. Thirdly, Studia Humanitatis and the civic purpose of education. Hankins gives special attention to the educational program of the Studia Humanitatis, the humanist curriculum built around grammar, rhetoric, history, poetry, and moral philosophy. In the book, this curriculum is not presented as a merely literary achievement, but as a tool for civic formation. Humanist education was meant to shape judgment, language, and ethical awareness so that students could become capable citizens and responsible leaders. This helps explain why Renaissance writers valued classical texts so highly. Ancient history and moral literature were not museum pieces, but resources for teaching public virtue. The book shows that education was one of the main vehicles through which humanists hoped to renew society. By training minds in eloquence and moral discernment, they believed they could influence political life at its root. This perspective also clarifies why Hankins resists seeing humanism as just a stylistic movement. For him, the humanities were linked to a serious social project, producing people able to serve the common good. The significance of that argument reaches beyond the Renaissance, since it frames liberal education as a civic and ethical undertaking rather than a purely academic one. Fourthly, Machiavelli within a broader humanist debate. Although Machiavelli is an important figure in the book, Hankins does not treat him as the single defining voice of Renaissance political thought. Instead, he places Machiavelli within a wider intellectual field that includes Petrarch, later humanists, and other writers concerned with virtue and civic formation. This is one of the book's main revisions of standard interpretations. Rather than presenting the Renaissance as moving neatly from classical idealism to Machiavellian realism, Hankins shows a more continuous debate about character, legitimacy, and civic duty. Machiavelli matters because he responds to the same crisis the humanists were trying to address, but he does not erase their concern for virtue. The book, therefore, complicates the usual opposition between idealism and realism. It suggests that even writers associated with hard political thinking were still working within a world shaped by moral expectations and civic anxieties. This broader framing helps readers see Machiavelli not as an isolated revolutionary thinker, but as part of a larger Renaissance conversation about how a society forms the kinds of people it needs to survive. Lastly, why the book matters for modern readers of politics and education. The book's relevance lies in its insistence that political life cannot be understood without attention to moral formation. Hankins does not offer a simple modern program, but he does provide a serious historical argument against reducing politics to procedure, strategy, or institutional engineering. Readers interested in governance, civic education, leadership ethics, or the history of humanism will find the book useful because it restores a neglected dimension of political thought, the belief that public order depends on the quality of persons. That makes the work stand out from more conventional Renaissance studies, which often focus on diplomacy, war, state formation, or Machiavelli alone. Hankins instead reconstructs a world in which education, virtue, and citizenship were deeply connected. For contemporary readers, the book offers a disciplined way to think about the moral limits of politics and the civic purpose of the humanities. Its value is intellectual rather than prescriptive. It helps readers understand why Renaissance thinkers believed that states are sustained not only by laws and institutions, but by habits of mind and character formed over time. In conclusion, Virtue Politics, Soulcraft, and Statecraft in Renaissance Italy should be read by students and scholars of Renaissance history, political theory, intellectual history, and the history of education. It will also reward readers interested in the ethical foundations of public life and in the long history of humanist thought. The book is especially useful for anyone who wants a more nuanced picture of Renaissance politics than the familiar contrast between idealistic civic humanism and Machiavellian realism. Hankins stands out by arguing that the deepest concern of many Renaissance thinkers was not system design but moral formation, how to create citizens and rulers capable of sustaining a just commonwealth. That makes the book more than a historical survey. It is an interpretation of how education, virtue, and governance were linked in a major intellectual tradition. Compared with similar books, it is distinguished by its breadth, its revisionist thesis, and its refusal to treat humanism as merely literary or Machiavelli as the whole story. Readers come away with a clearer understanding of why the humanities were seen as politically serious, and why questions about character remain central to Renaissance ideas of statecraft. If you would like to support James Hankins, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.